Everyone's asleep.
Talk radio show host who moonlights as a talk radio show parasite, the inimitable, the pugtastic, the employophobic, the most obtrusive impartial observer since Operation Mockingbird, the broke-ass activist with a sense of entitlement, broadcasting from an abandoned Masonic lodge at the fluoridated Agenda 21 corporate dictatorship pseudo-death camp of Auckland, New Zealand. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. For the listening discomfort of those people who don't like their brain places being invaded by new ideas, original thoughts, and things that might actually change the regular mundane existence by which you play out your day-to-day slave-like existence. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Guten Tag, wherever you may be, you are now listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest joining me now is Kurt Haskell. Kurt, welcome to the program.
Hey, glad to be on today. How are you? How are you doing, Vinnie?
I'm borderline and on fabulous. Thank you very much for asking.
No problem.
Well, Kurt, I know your name, but I don't know that much about you, and I'm sure the same is true for a lot of my audience. Would you mind filling us in a little bit about yourself and what it is you do?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. You know, I was an attorney for 15 years in the States. I lived in outside of Detroit. And just a regular guy going about my business. And then, in 2009, I was on the flight with the underwear bomber. I saw some things there. I saw the underwear bomber before he boarded. Long story short, what I saw there changed my life, got me to understand that U.S. government is not acting in everyone's best interest and is using false flag terror to push its agenda. And subsequent to that time, I decided to run for United States Congress in 2012. To hopefully try and make things better in the United States. And I came close, but I lost. And after I lost, my wife and I decided that we would leave the United States and we moved to Costa Rica and retired. So since 2014, I've been retired and living in Costa Rica.
How's that working out for you?
It's great. No complaints. Love Costa Rica.
Well, see, there you go.
It's the country with the most freedom in the world, if you ask me. I mean, if you want freedom and you're tired of, your oppressive government, this is the place to be.
Well, it doesn't cost of the world either. Now, the question is, if the underwear bomber is kind of a very big sketchy subject, and this is something that's been popping up a lot on the social media, is this recent Islamophobia. And I've been thinking to myself, it's like, well, hold on a second. Weren't we the ones who financed and set up and created all of the terrorist cells and gave them CIA training and unlimited budgets and all sorts of other goodies and things like that, and propped up a whole bunch of Middle Eastern dictators where all the terrorists incidentally come from? Like, weren't we the source of the terrorism, and now we're using the terrorism as an excuse to take the freedoms off of everybody whilst at the same time blaming it on the Muslims who we armed and trained to be terrorists?
Absolutely, and it's still going on. You see it today with ISIS. ISIS being created, trained, and funded by the U.S. government, and now you see all these fake events that they blame on ISIS to create situations where they can push their agenda. So yeah, it's still going on. It's been going on for many years, and it's still going on, just in a different form.
How did you and you kind of awaken to this all of a sudden, because you were thrust right in the middle of it? Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. Well, on Christmas Day 2009, my wife and I were on vacation in Africa, coming back from an African safari, and we had a connecting flight through Amsterdam. And we're sitting by the gate waiting to board, playing cards, sitting on the floor actually. And I saw what looked like a younger African man being escorted to the desk by what looked like maybe a wealthier Indian-looking man. And the Indian man said, this man needs to board the flight, but he doesn't have a passport. And the girl at the desk denied him boarding. And then the Indian man kind of argued a bit and said, well, he's from Sudan, and we do this sort of thing all the time. And she then went on her computer for a second and picked up the phone, and then she referred them to a manager down a secure hallway. So the two of them then walked unescorted down this hallway and went into a side room, and that's the last I thought about it until approximately 8 hours later, when we're coming into land in Detroit, and this man just so happened to set off what we thought was a bomb at that time. And little did I know at the time that he would be the so-called underwear bomber. I don't know how much you want to get into this. I could talk about this probably the whole show if you wanted to. It's pretty in depth, but what
I'd like to go in depth.
Let's go in depth.
Because it's not only that, it's also your personal awakening experience to the whole system as it's going on as well, right? And everybody has one of those awakening experiences, but it all happens to varying degrees and it's different for everybody. And so what I like to do is get everybody to tell their individual story, and there might be one person listening for whom it kind of clicks and makes sense and proceeds them to a new level of understanding.
Sounds good. So – I was just an everyday attorney at that time. I had no idea about any of this government corruption that's going on. This was kind of my eye-opening event. But anyway, so we're on our flight, Northwest Flight 253. It's a famous flight nowadays, the flight from Amsterdam to Detroit. We're at 20,000 feet altitude, and the pilot comes on the loudspeaker and says, take your seats. We're preparing to start our descent to land in Detroit. Just about that time, a flight attendant walked next to my seat, and I had an aisle seat on the right side of the plane, and she was talking to herself. She said, something smells like smoke. And I looked up. I was watching the seat back monitor in the seat in front of me, and I looked up, and I could see about seven rows ahead of me on the left side of the plane, there was smoke. And there was a commotion going on, and a man ran up to another man and put him in a headlock and hauled him into the first class area of the plane. Now, they didn't even speak. They didn't fight, nothing. It was kind of a strange situation. But some people were yelling. Some people were yelling, water, water, we need water over here. By this point, two seats were completely engulfed in fire. The fire went up the wall about 8 feet. It was close to the ceiling. And people were jumping on the floor, patting the fire, trying to put it out. And somebody screamed, terrorist, which I thought was kind of odd. But after about a minute of this, a flight attendant ran over with a fire extinguisher and put out the fire. And just after that, the pilot came on and said, well, because of what happened, we're going to have an emergency landing in Detroit. And then, you know, usually you go in real slow when you're landing, but this time we kind of sped up.
I was going to say the disaster normally happens after you land in Detroit, but go ahead.
Yes, that's true. So anyway, so we speed up and we do an emergency landing and we land. Nothing else happens. Everybody's thankful. We're out in the middle of the tarmac and I'm thinking we're going to stop. The chutes are going to come out. We're all going to jump out the chutes, get out on the runway. But no, that didn't happen. What happened was we actually taxied to the gate as if nothing had happened, which I thought was a bit strange. And then we're sitting up at the terminal, we just had a terrorist attack on our plane and they taxi us up to the terminal, not knowing if there's another bomb on board, another accomplice or even if the device that this man had is still going to detonate. Nobody knows any of this. So we end up sitting there about 20 or 30 minutes and not getting off our plane. And police come on our plane and they tell everyone to be quiet and stay in your seats. And they all go in the first class section where this man was hauled by the guy that put him in a headlock. And we can't see anything. We don't know what's going on really. And after about 30 minutes, the police walk out of the first class area with this African looking man and they stand in the doorway for maybe 30 seconds, doorway of the plane. And that's when I got a good look at the African man and I said, holy cow, to my wife. I'm like, that's the man that I saw in Amsterdam before we boarded. And I tell her the story. Up to this point, I hadn't even told her the story about him being denied entry and this man escorting him. Because I didn't think anything of it at the time. I didn't think this guy would even get on our plane. I knew he didn't have a passport at all. So I looked at her and I said,
put two and two together.
Yeah, it's kind of was a holy cow moment to me. So she's like, well, we need to talk to the FBI about this or police or whatever. So we get off the plane and we're all taken to a luggage claim area and they had evacuated the entire floor for people from our flight, and we're told to stand along a wall, and we wait there for a couple hours, I think, with our carry. They let us take our carry-on bags off the plane, which I thought was kind of weird, too. You know, you don't know if there's another bomb in there or what's in there, and we all stand together, and after a couple hours, they bring in bomb-sniffing dogs, and one of them sniffs an explosive device in another Indian-looking man's carry-on bag. Remember, the man that escorted the African man in Amsterdam looked Indian to me, and so did this man. And he's hauled away by police immediately, this man with the carry-on bag with supposed explosive in it, and they take him into a side room, and he's in there for about another hour, and they bring him out, and then they handcuff him and arrest him. And as they're arresting him, the police come up to the rest of us passengers and say, I'm sure you've seen what just happened here. You're not safe in this area any longer. We need to take you out of this room. And they took us out of this baggage claim area and walked us into a hallway on the other side of the building. So clearly there was something going on with this Indian man too. You know, we didn't really know what at the time. But by this point, we had been held about 5 hours or so, or 6 hours, and then we started, and we couldn't use our phones or go to the bathroom or get drinks or anything, not knowing how long we're going to be there on Christmas Day. It was pretty upsetting. But at this point, we were told we all had to do interviews with the FBI, and then we'd be free to go. And when they told us we had to do interviews with the FBI, the police said, we have those responsible for this in custody, those, plural, more than one person. And they said, now that we have those responsible for this in custody, you can do an interview and then you'll be free to go. So then this is when I first told my story to the FBI, and they said, we'll be in contact with you. And I said, okay, and I gave them my contact information. So we left, and you know, here I am thinking I'm helping to catch an accomplice to a terrorist, right? I'm thinking nothing else of the sort at this point. And then, you know, a few days later, two FBI agents came to my law office and they started, I won't say questioning me. They started more like telling me things. No, excuse me. Trying to, in my opinion, they were trying to make me think I didn't see what I did. Trying to put words in my mouth or doubt in my mind. It's kind of the impression I got. Now look, I was an attorney at this point. I'd been an attorney, for 10 years at that point. And
I guess those agents were shit out of luck then.
Right. You know, I knew how investigations work. I know how evidence works. And what I expected was that the police would come in with the video from the Amsterdam airport and have me identify the accomplice. I was sure that's what they were going to do. And I asked them if they brought the video, and they looked at each other and kind of chuckled under their breath. And I thought that was very weird. They didn't respond. I said, you know, I'm sure you brought the video from Amsterdam, and no answer. No, just kind of a chuckle. So I thought that was weird. And then they got out a series of 8 still photographs and showed them to me and asked me if I knew who the people were. And I think it was 8 or maybe 9. But anyway, I had no idea who any of them were, but the last 2 were of the bomber, the African man. And they tried to confuse me to try and tell me they were 2 different people and this and that. And, you know, hey, Kurt, it's easy to confuse what African-American men look like. And there were a lot of them on this plane. And I was like, there were like 5 African people on this plane, you know. And he was pretty much the only young African male. So, no, you know, I know who it was and I know this is the man. But anyway, this is the sort of thing they're trying to do to me. Instead of trying to get information from me, they're trying to give information to me to confuse me. Anyway.
Did you have like alarm bells going off at that point? Like what's going on here kind of thing?
At that point, yeah, because I knew this is not how an FBI interview should go. So when they left, I said, well, good luck in your investigation if you're actually trying to solve this crime. And I don't think they really liked that. But, yeah, at this point, red flags are going up with me. And then, a few days later, the media comes out and says the investigation has concluded after watching 400 hours of security camera footage from Amsterdam that there were no accomplices. And I knew this was a lie. I knew it was a flat out lie. And they were covering up. So at this point, I knew there was some sort of cover-up going on. So I started going to the hearings at this point and conducting my own investigation because the trial was in Detroit, which was I lived just outside of Detroit, and I was an attorney practicing in the courts in Detroit all the time. So this trial was going on at the courthouse that I was an attorney in every week. So it's kind of strange, but anyway, so I was locals where I could go to the hearings. And a lot of the times I was the only passenger even there at the hearings watching what's going on. It was just me and the media a lot of the time. So a few weeks into this, after the event took place, there were hearings in Congress in the U.S. government, and the State Department admitted during the hearings that they knew Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab, the underwear bomber. They admitted they knew he was a terrorist, and they put him on our plane on purpose. They admitted this during the hearings. But they said they put him on our plane on purpose to follow him into the United States in the hopes that he would lead them to other terrorists after he landed. That was their excuse. Well, but later I would find out that was not the real reason they put him on our plane. But it took me a long time. Long time to figure this out. So at this point, I'm thinking the U.S. government put a terrorist onto our plane on purpose with a bomb. And I thought this for the longest time until it took me about a year and a half into my investigation to figure out what really happened. So I start going to the hearings, and weird things were happening in the hearings. Like, I'll give you some examples. The judge – sealed all of the Amsterdam security camera footage permanently and wouldn't let it be used in the trial and not released to the public ever, permanently sealed. So it's never been seen by anybody in the public or in the court case. So that was very weird. Then the underwear bomber fired his court-appointed attorney, so he was acting on his own, and the judge gave him a standby attorney, or it's like a helper, an attorney just to help you write up documents and answer your questions and that kind of thing. So he didn't really have a lawyer, but he had a standby. But anyway, then the judge ruled that the standby attorney couldn't see any of the evidence of the case unless the bomber gave the standby attorney the evidence. So I thought that was really weird being an attorney, because how can you help someone with their case if you don't even have access to any of the evidence? So I thought that was a really bizarre ruling. And it was the government's attorneys, the prosecutor, that asked for this. And what they said was, we don't want the standby attorney to have any of the evidence, because if he has it, third parties, including the passengers, can subpoena the information and use it to sue the United States government. And I thought that was very telling, because it showed me that they were very concerned that the federal government would be sued over this matter. And here I am thinking, well, if this is a lone terrorist, then what does the United States government have to do with it? Why would they be concerned about being sued by us passengers?
You see, that's so the problem when you're the only one in the room actually fucking listening. You start to wonder about shit like that.
Right. So anyway, I'm the only one there with all these people from the mainstream media, and you know the mainstream media, they don't tell the truth. I didn't really know this fully at the time, but I quickly learned it. There was a woman there from a reporter from the Detroit Free Press, the main paper in Detroit, and we would both be at all the hearings. And after every hearing, she would want to talk to me because I would be the only passenger there. And I would tell her my story, that this is a cover-up, you know, and I saw this and that. And I would look in the paper, and the story would never come out. And then at the next hearing, I would see her again, and we would talk again. And I would be like, you know, what happened? Oh, my editor won't post the story in the paper. So, but then she would be like, well, let's do another interview. So I would do another one, and then that wouldn't make it in the paper either. And this went on like five different times, and it got to be a joke. Hey, you want to interview me again for that story that never makes the paper? You know, that kind of thing.
Sure, I got 2 hours. You know?
So I started seeing, you know, the corruption that was going on. So, being an attorney, it was disturbing to me, the ruling that the judge said the standby attorney couldn't see any of the evidence. And that bothered me, because I, you know, whether the guy is guilty or not, I think he had a right to a fair trial. So, and being an attorney, seeing what I did, I thought there was something funny with the U.S. government going on. I couldn't put my finger on it entirely at this point, but they had already admitted they put him on the plane on purpose, and I saw, you know, he got escorted on without even having a passport. And by the way, the security line in Amsterdam is for not only passport control, but also, you know, metal detectors and security. It's the same line. So in my opinion, he didn't show his passport, so he didn't go through any security there at all, is what happened. But anyway.
You can get that with diplomatic immunity as well. You can have a diplomatic passport and you have the little stickers that say diplomatic on it. So if you've got a bag or something of that nature that you don't want to be checked, you can just put the sticker on your bag and you walk right on through.
Yeah, yeah. This guy didn't have any passport at all, though. So anyway, so back to where I was at. I decided to send a fax to the standby attorney from my law office. And I said, hey, I'm a local attorney, just so you know. You know, I was at the court hearing the other day where the judge says you can't see any of the evidence. I was on the plane. I saw some questionable things. I saw the perpetrator, your client, before he boarded, yada, yada, yada. I send it out. About 5 minutes later, I get a call from my law office telling me that we need to meet. It was a standby attorney. So we set up a time to meet, and I went to his office in Detroit, and we talked for about 2 hours. And I said, you know, there's something strange going on here. you know, some sort of cover up going on. And I, you know, I told him my story, and he said, you know, I've been getting the same impression that there's some kind of cover up going on. My own quasi client that I'm supposed to help won't even talk to me or tell me what's going on. And he says the jail is blocking communications between him and the bomber, you know, not giving him messages, not giving him faxes, and that sort of thing. And he says, definitely, I've had the same thoughts that something strange is going on. So he said, well, we'll stay in touch. So we did stay in touch, and we would, you know, talk briefly at the hearings, myself and the standby attorney. I ended up going to, I don't know, maybe like 10 hearings in this case, quite a few. As it got closer to the trial, the media would not talk to me at all. It took about a year and a half for the case to get to trial. And they would not even talk about who I was or anything. And as the trial got close, it was a few days away, like 5 days away, the trial. And the judge asked the bomber, the underwear bomber, who he intended to call as a witness. And to my surprise, he said, I'm only calling one witness, attorney Kurt Haskell. So I was listed as his only possible witness in this case. And I kind of got nervous then, because I didn't know what the government was going to do to try and stop me from testifying. I didn't think there was any chance in hell the government was going to let me get on a stand and blow their case wide open, because that's what would have happened, I thought. And I didn't know if it was going to be they were going to silence me or silence the bomber or what. So I kind of got nervous. But anyway, I talked to the standby attorney then, and I said, look, I have some concerns about me testifying, because it's going to be the underwear bomber asking me questions on the stand. And how do I know he's not in on this, working for the government, and he's going to ask questions to make me look bad on the stand? And I thought he would say, the standby attorney would say something to me like, oh, you don't have to be concerned about that, or that's no worries. His response was interesting. He said, if I find anything like that out, I'll let you know. So this was a year and a half into the case, and this tells me he didn't even know if his own client at that point was part of the government corruption. Very telling.
Sounds like you were starting to have the realization I had after maybe a year of looking into corruption and stuff, was that if somebody tells you something that doesn't make any sense, it's because there's some kind of scumbaggery going on. And that's kind of it.
It makes no sense. Being an attorney, you know, I knew he had this client for a year and a half as a standby attorney still, but he's helping him for a year and a half, and he can't even give me a straight answer whether his own client is working with the government on this corrupt scheme. You know, it doesn't make any sense, right? So also just before the trial, the government hired two explosive experts to testify about the bomb. And they had to submit preliminary reports to the court. And when they did so, both of them said the bomb could not have detonated because it lacked a detonator. They said it was completely 100% defective bomb and could not have exploded. So to me, this was the last straw, because the official story was that this man flew to Yemen, had this bomb made by an explosive expert of Al-Qaeda. ISIS wasn't around yet. And he went back to Nigeria, boarded this plane. You know, he had this bomb in his underwear for several days, and flew to Amsterdam and then to Detroit. And the bomb didn't blow because he wore it in his underwear for too long. But their own experts that they hired both said it could not have detonated because it didn't have a detonator. So to me, that tells me that this bomb was planted on him by some sort of undercover U.S. government source. And to me, that made all the sense in the world, because we had at this point the government
planted on him stateside rather than before the flight, you mean? Mm-hmm.
In Amsterdam, yeah.
Oh, yeah. In Amsterdam.
Remember,
oh,
yeah. Yeah, remember we had the admission that the U.S. government put him on the plane on purpose. We already had that. And then we have this, their own experts saying it was an impossibly defective bomb. So you can put two and two together and come up with what really happened here, you know, with all the other weird things that were going on with the trial and, you know, the government trying to make me see I didn't see what I did and that sort of thing. You know, so they escorted him around security and made sure he got on the plane through, you know, talking to a manager instead of going through normal security line. Gave him some sort of, whether the bomber was in on it or not, to this day I'm not even sure, but it made sure he had a defective bomb that would cause a small fire that could be put out and no explosion. And then they could claim terrorist attack over Detroit on Christmas Day and use it to implement all these different policies, and that's exactly what happened.
And implement them during Christmas when approximately 95% of Congress is away on break.
Right. And this was the event that ushered in all the body scanning machines to the airport. So it was a fraudulent event. They had all these machines sitting in warehouses ready to roll out, and they were just waiting for the right moment. Now, in the month before this happened, there was a bill that had passed the House waiting to be voted on by the Senate that said body scanning machines shall only be used if someone first sets off the metal detector at airports. So obviously somebody did not want that bill to be passed and signed by the president, and this event happens and that bill never gets passed. But back to the trial. So we're at the trial. I get kicked out by the judge as soon as it starts because, she doesn't want me hearing anything because I'm a witness. So I'm only there for about 1 minute and I'm kicked out. And then,
it's a hearing. It's not something you're supposed to be able to listen to.
Right. Exactly. So I can't be there. But 2 hours into the trial, he pleads guilty to all charges. Now, the charges require him to serve life in prison with no chance of parole. Zero. Nobody ever pleads to that. Ever. Why would you? You take your chances at a trial, you know, especially with me on your witness list. If anything, you can use that as a bargaining chip to get some of the charges lowered, right? But he didn't do that. And I thought that was really weird. So, you know, a couple, or we go back for sentencing about 2 months later, and all victims in Michigan are allowed to make a victim impact statement. So, and usually the judge will let you speak as long as you want because you're the reason for the trial. You're the victims. You get to say your piece before he's sentenced, right? This particular judge limited all the victims to 5 minutes each. And even though it was a plane full of 200 some passengers, only five submitted that they wanted to speak at the victim impact statements. So there were only five. And to me, this is unheard of, limiting the amount of time a victim can speak with a victim impact statement. And to me, this was done specifically so I wouldn't be able to go on and on and on at the trial like I'm doing right now. So what I had to do is I wrote out my victim impact statement ahead of time and timed it and practiced it so I would go 5 minutes. And I spent my entire 5 minutes ripping on the government, the media, and the court system for lying. And you can, if anyone's interested, you can Google Kurt Haskell victim impact statement. It's word for word on the internet, my statement. And it's pretty damning of what happened here. But anyway, so I did finally get a five minutes of time in the courtroom speaking my piece. So after this, after the sentencing, I ran into his standby attorney at a courthouse about a month later. We just happened to have cases at the same courthouse at the same day. And I said, let's talk in the hallway for a minute. And I said, look, you and I both know that plea, that guilty plea was not legitimate. Nobody ever makes a guilty plea to mandatory life in jail with no chance of parole. And I left out one part too. He had been offered several lenient plea deals, because the government just wanted the case to go away and get it out of the media, according to his standby lawyer, and he turned them all down. So he's turning down lenient plea deals. 2 hours into the trial, he makes his guilty plea to all charges. But anyway, what his standby attorney said to me was, I said, look, it's only one of three things. He was promised something to make this plea. He was threatened in jail, or he was tortured. And his standby attorney said, it's either the second one or the third one, which is he was threatened or he was tortured in jail. So even his own standby attorney knew something was going on there to get him to take this plea. So that was my eye-opening event. And this took, I ended up investigating this about 2,000 hours of my own time over 2 years to try and figure out what really happened. And what really happened was he was given a defective bomb by an undercover government agent. He was escorted on the plane. They knew he would attempt to set off this device, and they knew it would start a small fire, and they knew it would not explode, and they could put it out. And that's exactly what happened. And that was my eye-opening event in my life. And since then, whenever one of these events happen, I look at it closely to see what's going on, because I know the government's bag of tricks now. I know what they do. I know how they lie. I know how they push certain fake evidence, hide real evidence, and do things like that. I've seen their bag of tricks firsthand.
Have you noticed that once you've seen their bag of tricks, it's kind of predictable from then on, you know? Like, I came home one day and my wife goes, baby, there's been like a truck bomb defused in Times Square. Offhand, I just go, oh, don't worry about it, baby, it's just the FBI. And it was. You know?
Yes, it becomes repetitive. No, you know, once you've seen it and you know this sort of thing goes on, yeah, you can pick out the fake ones. You know, like some of these events happen and I'm calling, you know, this is a government event 5 minutes after I see the headlines, and people are like, wait, you know, you need to wait and see what details come out to make that call. And I'm like, I've already seen enough. Now I have a list of 41 criteria that I look at. And once I start seeing, you know, 5, 6, 7 items on the list, that's all I need.
Once they start blobbing up immediately, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. It's yeah. Not that difficult. Have you got like that list at hand or something like that, will be able to rattle off at least a few of them, because
I don't have it at hand. I can rattle off some of them, sure. Sure. The event gets extensive media coverage, number one. Number two, there's some sort of dropped identification. There are reports of an assault rifle being used. Body armor is used. The assailant shouted Allahu Akbar. This, any ties to ISIS, clearly suspect. There's a manifesto or some sort of video manifesto on the internet. The attack is in a public place of some kind with a lot of people. It's usually public transportation or a theater, something like that. No motive whatsoever for the attacks. Nobody ever has any kind of motive. The perpetrator almost never survives, or will have some kind of show trial like in the Boston bombing. That was completely theater, that trial. There are immediate calls for new restrictive laws to protect the people, or the attack is used to bomb a country in the Middle East, usually Syria lately anyway. You know, that's just off the top of my head, but there's 41. So once I start seeing these pop up, none of them on the list occur in normal situations.
You know what's maybe funny, Curtis, when you're rattling off them, yeah, but when you're rattling off just those few, it's just like
every single terrorist attack I've seen in the media essentially fits the small bit of criteria that you've already laid out there, you know, from 9/11 to the underwear bomber to the shoe bomber to the WTC bombing set up by the FBI and so on and so forth. It doesn't matter. False flag terrorism is the number one tool for motivating an unwilling population into a really shit situation. It's just what happens, okay? Hey, look, everybody, we're really happy and we love our way of life and everything like that, so we're not really going to be too fussed if you want to go and make us do anything, so we're going to need a little bit more
extra motivation.
Right, and if you think about it, you know, you have these psychopaths that are in control, and are they going to sit around and wait for certain events to happen so that they can push new onerous laws or invade or bomb countries? No, they're not going to sit around and wait. They're going to create the fake event to use as the impetus to go bomb Syria, to, you know, to take away more of your constitutional rights, to do whatever they want to do. They're not going to sit around and wait. Why do they need to wait? They can create the fake event now, and that's what they're doing. It's very obvious.
There is a phrase that you will never hear a very powerful, wealthy person say, "No, I'm not interested in that, bro. I've got enough money and power."
No, not at all. Right. And I tell people, think about it logically. You're super wealthy. You have all the money you need. You don't really need any more. You don't, what is it that you crave? You're going to crave more and more control. You don't want all these millions of poor people being able to vote to take away your power or your money, right? So what they want is everlasting control of their money and more power. And it's very simple if you look at it like that to see what's going on. And that's exactly what they're doing. Yep. Exactly.
We are the definition of conspiracy theorists, people who believe, absolutely believe, that powerful people who have a lot of influence will use their power to maintain and grow their influence. You know, stranger things have happened.
Right. It's plain as day. I don't know how so many people can't see it. They call you crazy that you have these thoughts, but it's so obvious.
Yeah, it is so obvious. No, but you didn't always see it. Once you saw it the way everybody else did, I did too. And it only took that one event to actually snap us out of it. And everybody doesn't see it for the same reason we didn't in the first place. We get born into a situation in a society that brainwashes us from birth, and we're getting secondhand brainwashing from our families who were brainwashed by the state in the first place, and then they send us, separate us from our parents, however free-thinking they were, to a state brainwashing institution for a long period of time. We have a central authority figure. You're operating on very little sleep, and you get ostracized if you're very different. It's basic mind control tenets. Essentially, everybody who lives in the modern world is under some kind of mind control. And here's how you know. If you've never questioned whether or not you're under a form of mind control, it's working.
Right.
And it's, we're still in the grief process, I think. It goes denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, right? When you wake up to the truth, you're like, no, I don't want it to be true. I don't want it to be true that this ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery with no more power and money than God with satanic pedophile ambitions that can currently control the world and craft our legislation years before it actually gets passed. I don't want to believe it. But it is true. And so you go, oh, I'm a little bit upset about that. But we got to go through that process. We have to get over the denial. We have to get over the anger. And I don't know about you, but I've seen a lot of people in this movement come and go, Kurt. They just come in for the wrong reasons, and they think they're going to change the world, right? And they think that changing the world is a big thing, but it's not actually. Changing the world is a small thing. It's about telling the truth when everybody else is lying. That's changing the world.
Right. And that's a difficult thing to do. Because you're going to be ridiculed, you're going to be made fun of, you know, there may be pressures on your job, your family, these sort of things, and you have to be able to stand up to that. You know, I've had the mainstream media write articles about me being crazy. You know, it's ridiculous. you know, being, I was an attorney over 10 years when the underwear bomber event happened. No, never been in trouble with my career. I had a very successful law office, and they're writing stories about how I'm crazy. You know, it's, you have to be able to stand up to those sort of things. I've had all kinds of people tell me I'm lying and making things up, and it didn't make any sense. Why would I do that? I've never made one penny off my story ever. You know, I put all this time into it, never made any money. I've never tried to sell a book or do anything. You know, and it's not like it got me any more business at my office. That never happened either. If anything, I probably lost some business by being anti-government now, anti-U.S. government. But, you know, if you think about it, why would I do this? Why would I make it up? I'm not making it up. But it's hard to keep moving forward because 90% of people are against you. They don't want to believe what you have to say.
Mm. I tried to get an interview request off of some guy who's like a Muslim professor, right? And he like annihilates the mainstream media when they try to demonize the terrorists and everything, just like slaps them down. And his assistant just told me, I'm sorry, he's not going to be able to do an interview. And I'm like, what, ever? She's like, yeah, he's writing a book right now. And I go, you know what? That's the way of it, isn't it? Out of all the infinite variation, out of all the billions of people, it actually, the responsibility of very important things always winds up falling on one person's shoulders, doesn't it, Kurt?
Yeah, you know, it seems that way. I mean, everybody should be uniting to stop this sort of thing, and they're not. They're scared. They're in denial. They're afraid they're going to lose their jobs or the police are going to come knocking on their door, what have you. Worse than that, they work against you. They call you conspiracy theorists, crazy. And it's almost comical because these are the people that do no investigation into what's going on. And, you know, someone like myself that investigates every detail, these people just come up to me and say, oh, that's not true. You know, you're crazy. You're a conspiracy theorist. Your opinion on that isn't true. And it's just so, it's disturbing. Now, I actually look into all the details to try and figure out what happens in all these events, and I don't know. I guess it's just severe brainwashing going on.
Yeah, well, it's residual. It kind of gets everybody. It's like sand, beach. And I think when we're talking about this kind of subject and you get into that sort of that headspace, because let's just say you've being in the middle of a situation, you didn't ask to be in the middle of the situation, it just kind of fell on your lap, and you started doing an investigation, not because somebody told you to do the investigation, but because you had a moral obligation, right? You do what you're compelled to do. That's the hardest thing in life, because the vast majority of people don't do what their conscience dictates. They do what they're told to do. They do what authorities influence them to do. Now, me, fortunately, I've had authorities lie to me to my face and betray me really, really nastily many times, you know. So I stopped trusting them after like maybe the 6th or 7th or 800th time that they betrayed my trust. I mean, yes. I try. But every now and again, we fall back into that that lustful trust, don't we? And now we've got an election coming on, and I'm hearing all of this kind of, I don't know. There was an episode of Family Guy where Lois won an election in Quahog because she just kept repeating the words 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, terrorist. Yes. See, now, somebody told me once a very interesting factoid about frontal lobe activity. This is where all your higher thought functioning goes in, right? Did you know that shuts down when you're afraid and in a panic? Right? So when you're watching the media and they're telling you about all this fear and terrorism and scary stuff, are they encouraging you to think about it, to question it, to investigate it, to maybe open up your mind to anything new? No? No, they're trying to shut down your higher thinking processes, and the entire point of entertainment nowadays, I think, is to distract you from looking inward for your own answers.
Yeah, I mean, basically the whole mainstream media now is just brainwashing everyone constantly. There's not even any attempt to get at any truth. It's just fear, 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 fear. You know, a couple of months ago, I watched a speech that John F. Kennedy was making when he was president, and the difference between him speaking and what we hear from presidents nowadays was shocking. He was all upbeat, positive, hopeful. There was no fear being pushed by him at all. And of course he got assassinated, and now, you know, think of all the speeches that Obama makes and how many are upbeat and positive and hopeful. No, it's always about fear, fear, fear. You need to be scared of this and that, and we're going to invade this country, and then there's going to be this war. You know, and that's what we have nowadays. It's intentional. It's exactly what you said. They don't want you thinking about what's really going on. They're just pushing fear.
If that is the case, I was talking about today on Facebook about the elections. Every time an election comes up, somebody goes, oh, well, you need to vote for the lesser of two evils. And I go, okay, how's that working out for you? All right, it's a phrase people often use when they're voting, but when was the last time it got anybody good elected? All right, it just doesn't work. So if you've got something that doesn't work, you abandon it immediately, okay? It's got kind of like if you've got an employee who doesn't work, you fire him, okay? And you've got the government right now, are they working? No, you fire them, you stop paying your taxes, you stop giving them money. You know, I'm very lucky. I don't have to pay taxes. You know why? Because I don't exist in a tax bracket. It was something very interesting. I'm not a charity. I'm not a business. I'm not a sole trader. And I'm not an employee. And I don't have any inheritance. I don't have any investment properties. I don't have any shares in companies or anything like that. And so there's nothing to tax. It's really funny. All these free man on the land people have been going out there, going into court. They get their homes taken off them, their boats, their cars, their families, their sanity, their everything, their freedom. And the only reason why they have all that stuff taken off of them is because they didn't want it taken off of them, and they wanted to show you, you can't take this from me. Well, you don't know who you're dealing with, son. You're dealing with some very, very nasty people who don't have rules. They don't have rules, okay? And if they do, even if they do have rules, they don't apply to you, okay? What do you think? After you've found this out, okay, that the world is run by criminal psychopaths, then go and Google psychopaths who give a fuck what you think, psychopaths who care about your rights, psychopaths who really are actually good guys underneath. You will find zero results, and the internet is a big place. Okay? You can't trust these people. Right? But the problem is, they're capable of lying really convincingly. That's the rub. These people are incredible at deceiving us. I cried when Obama got elected, bro. I did. I was like, oh, the hope. Oh, the change. It's going to be so magnificent. And then the only thing that changed is the amount of homeless people begging for it. You see, and after this comes to fruition in your brain places, ladies and gentlemen, when you realize that the only way you can do anything in life is to have a little bit of hope and a little bit of faith in yourself, because although you're your greatest deceiver, you're like, oh, I wouldn't lie to me, and that's why you get away with it so many often. But also, because you don't have to care what other people think who are wrong. You don't have to care what other people say who are idiots who didn't do any of the investigation. You know the truth, don't you, ladies and gentlemen? You know who and what you are, and you don't actually have to justify yourself to anybody. That was something that somebody told me I thought was really important. Vinny, you no longer have to justify yourself to anybody. Kurt, you no longer have to justify yourself to anybody.
Right, exactly. Nobody does, really. But people think that they do. And, you know, it affects them. They want to fit in. They want to get along with people. They don't want people to call them crazy. They don't want any problems at work. So they think that they do. But you're right. I don't. You don't. Nobody does. And if everyone took that attitude, the world would be a much better place, but they don't. They're letting the psychopaths control everything. It's all this politically correct behavior, if you will. You can't say this, you can't do that. It's not politically correct. It's anti-American to say that your government is doing these things to you. And you should be shunned if you're talking about your government doing these things or talking negatively about things the military is doing in the Middle East. Shame on you.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of thing.
What can we do in the – I wrote this down earlier today. What can we in the West do about these evil Muslims? Could we cut off their food supplies with trade sanctions, demonize them in the mainstream media? Perhaps we could illegally invade their countries or destroy their essential infrastructure, maybe occupy their lands or steal their natural resources. Or perhaps we could covertly train, arm and finance terrorist groups or prop off and sell arms to tyrannical dictators and royal families. Oh, wait. We already did. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. Kurt Haskell is my very special guest, and we'll be right back after the break. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
I like very much
radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
The last hour of American Freedom Radio you have been listening to is proudly sponsored in part by BigReggaeMix.com, the global healing station.
Produced by Mitch Santel and executive produced by none other than Errol Brown, winner of 5 Grammy Awards and the last producer and engineer of Bob Marley. Visit us now at BigReggaeMix.com for the latest show schedule, updates, and blog postings. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, too. BigReggaeMix.com.
Nobody questions things in this country anymore. Nobody questions things. Every one of those items is provably untrue at one level or another, but we believe them because they're pounded into our heads from the time we're children. That's what they do with that kind of stuff. They put it in the heads of kids. They pound it in there because kids are too young to be able to mount a sophisticated argument against these kind of ideas. And so kids, and up to a certain age, by the way, kids are going to believe everything a grown-up tells them, everything. So kids never learn to question things. Nobody questions things in this country anymore. Why? People are too fat and happy. People are way too prosperous for their own good. Everyone's got a cell phone that'll make pancakes now, you know? So nobody wants to rock the boat. And people just gizmo. Americans have been silenced, bought off and silenced by gizmos and toys. And as a result, no one's ever learned to question things. No one questions things in this country anymore. No one questions things.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFI wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics,
no taboo topics,
no fear of doom,
no fear of doom.
We are American Freedom Radio,
American Freedom Radio.
I'm gonna make you an offer you can't refuse. It's hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you go freaking nuts.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It is the Vinny Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio for your listening discomfort. Kind of like in a hemorrhoidal radio fashion, you know, that kind of discomfort. Anyway, my very special guest is Kurt Haskell. I'm switching gears. Is Dwayne, has anybody ever made a kind of Kurt Haskell hemorrhoid reference on the radio before? now, we're getting into the sort of philosophy of waking up, right? And I want people in the audience to recognize that this is a listener-supported broadcast on a listener-supported station. Now, I know that you love advertising all the time that interrupts important conversations, that sell you stuff that you don't really want to buy, that even if you did buy it, wouldn't actually be that frickin' useful, and you can't even afford it anyway, even if you wanted it. I mean, I know that stuff really frickin' valuable to you, but there are some people that value things like 55 minutes of airtime an hour to really flesh out some issues and actually have a real adult discussion with no FCC regulations so you can continue that very adult discussion. We can talk about whatever the F we want and whatever we fucking want to. So go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and start donating today. Regularly, please, ladies and gentlemen. Running this show is a pain in the ass. Do you have any idea how much of a pain in the ass it must be to run a network with all of the great guests and all of the great show hosts, the catalog that we've got here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com? It just keeps growing. I don't know how the network owners like keeping up with all the archives and all of this other kind of stuff. The man is a machine. And quite frankly, ladies and gentlemen, I can't give him the oil to keep that machine running. I'm going to ask you to do it, right? Because I'm part of the machine myself. And as you say, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Kurt Haskell, welcome back.
Hey, Vinny. Ready for hour two?
Yeah. How could I not be? Well,
all right.
I don't know. It's like you come into it with a bit of a reputation because your life changed in directions pretty massively. Going from a practicing attorney to living in frickin' Costa Rica and being an activist, mate.
Right. Yeah. You know, I was just a regular sheep back in 2009. I didn't know about any of this. I thought, you know, I had some questions about 9/11. Some things didn't add up, but I didn't really understand what was going on. And then to go from that to being overnight, I went to became a government whistleblower, you know, exposing this. And then I was a candidate for United States Congress in 2012, came within a hair of winning, and then gave it all up and left the United States and gave up on the United States. And now just live out in the jungle in Costa Rica. So, yeah, it's much of this has to do with the one event, the underwear bombing event. It was a complete life-changing experience for me, completely.
How did you deal with all that pain, bro? Because I don't know about you, but when you lose your entire life's work, like everything you'd been working towards and being a lawyer and everything, and now that's starting to kind of go down the tubes with the amount of stress and all the attacks you must have been getting. Like, whistleblower back then was a really dirty word. Nowadays, whistleblower is like a hero type thing. But back then, that was like being scum on the bottom of a boot.
Yeah, well, you know, initially people were really all over me, you know, attacking me, saying I had different agendas and I was lying and all these things, all these terrible things they're saying about me. But what happened in my case is we had the government come out and admit that they put him on my plane on purpose. So that really, after my story had come out, they came out and said that. So that kind of changed as far as people believing me or not. Then a lot of people switched to the other side and said, hey, maybe this guy's telling the truth all along. So I had that in my favor, and it went from maybe 90% against me to about 80, 90% for me because of that primarily. It was tough for a while because I was just an eyewitness. I was just trying to get to the bottom of what I saw and find out why our plane almost blew up and why am I hitting a brick wall trying to find out this information. And then I have all these people coming out and attacking me on top of it and the media calling me crazy. You know, it was very wrong and it really turned me off not only to the media. I had no idea how corrupt the media was before this. Not only the media, the court system I worked in, you know, now I have the court building that I'm in for cases a couple times every week, where we have this courtroom covering up what's going on, hiding things, sealing security video permanently from everyone. My own government, I have to come to grips with them putting a terrorist on my plane, even with a dud bomb. It did start my plane on fire at 20,000 feet.
And it did get you stuck in Detroit for 6 hours on Christmas.
On Christmas Day, right.
I mean, just not for the only kick that, of the teeth.
Yeah, not only that, but think about, it was a very traumatic event. I mean, we thought this event was real for a while. And think about how you would feel. You're at 20,000 feet, and you look up, and there are two seats completely engulfed in flames. The flames are 8 feet up your wall, and people are yelling, trying to put out this fire. Think about how scared you would be. And this went on for about a minute, which is a long time, a long time. And, you know, I had nightmares about this for months. I didn't sleep for probably 6 months after this. It was terrible. And then to find out it was all done on purpose by your own government, it's very, very disturbing. So it turned me off to not only the media, but the court system and the government. And that's why I've gone out of all of those. I've attacked the media. I've ended my career and left my country. And it's all because of this one event, or a lot of it anyway.
Well, I guess the underwear bombers wasn't the only life that was destroyed that day, right?
Oh, but my life's not destroyed, just changed.
It was destroyed, bro. Everything you had at that point kind of disappeared, right? And you had to start from scratch. Yeah. That's destroyed. It's just been rebuilt, is all.
Okay.
Okay. And I think that's happened to all of us, right? And that's one of the tenets of like the 33rd degree of Freemasonry, order out of chaos. It's the whole reason why the elite actually stage all these events is because they come in and they oppose the order after they've created the chaos. But the reason that they worship this dynamic is because they've recognized that in ancient wisdom, it's the only way to actually create real meaningful change. Whatever you've built in order to improve it, sometimes you have to destroy it and destroy it almost completely and then rebuild it stronger and then reshape it. And if necessary, it has to be destroyed again and again as many times as necessary to achieve enlightenment. That's their belief. Now, I can gel with some of that, but I can't gel with killing people for profit. I can't gel with lying just for fun. I can't gel with betrayal just for the sake of it. Those kind of things.
Well, you have to think, even if people aren't dying, okay? See, to me, it's very damaging just that these events take place because of what the repercussions are. Now, I'll give you an example. There was a truck attack in Nice, France, about a week or so ago, where we're told, I don't know how many people died, 20-some or something like that, run over by truck on the promenade. Okay, whether you believe that or not, I think the evidence shows that this was another false flag attack. But anyway, the repercussions from that attack, even if nobody died, is that France went out a couple days later and bombed Syria. So there are very damaging repercussions from these fake events, even if nobody dies. Also, the martial law that had been declared in France after the Bataclan theater attack, which it was set for 90 days, it was set to expire, and now we have the Nice truck attack, and it's extended. Again, it doesn't expire. So, you know, you don't have to have real people dying. These fake events have long-lasting policy implications or war implications on entire countries, and we're seeing it constantly now. So it's just out of control how many of these false flag attacks we're seeing these days. It's almost on a daily basis.
Oh, you know, I haven't been watching the media at all for a long time, and I feel nonetheless as uninformed and misinformed as I ever was, and I don't keep up with current events because I figure what's the point? Because what happens is a current event happens, and then they pass the legislation, boom, and then only about 6 months later does somebody piece together all the pieces of the jigsaw and then come on a radio and interview and then tell it about it in the retrospective, right? Just like what happened with the underwear bomber, it took you a long time to come to the conclusions and amass the evidence. And right. That's the thing that I believe is the most important with news gathering, is putting into place the correct and complete pieces of puzzle so that when people are recalling history, when people are actually learning about things, they're not learning about something in the moment that changes when more information comes in tomorrow.
Right, but in these events that we're seeing now with these false flag events, you know, usually within an hour or two into the event, we have the perpetrator's name, we have his picture, he's probably dead, you know, we have him tied to ISIS already, we're already talking about policy implications, you know, talking about gun control or, you know, ISIS being behind it and, you know, attacking ISIS. All within hours. There's never any real investigation. If this was real life, these investigations would take months, maybe years, to establish ties to ISIS. You're not going to – but today what we see is, oh, the guy had an ISIS flag in his bedroom. It's tied to ISIS. Now we're going to go bomb ISIS tomorrow in Syria. I mean, this is – it doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't. Or, oh, he dropped his Syrian passport. Well, why in the hell did he have his passport when he's doing a suicide bombing? I mean, you know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Was it also one of those triple titanium tri-weave passports that could survive the explosion of a jet fucking lighter and then land miraculously untouched down on the motherfucking ground? Yeah,
it's ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, they make those passports indestructible nowadays, right?
I mean, obviously.
It's laughable. It's laughable. But you're right. If,
you know what
if
really
these
gets
events
me
were real,
is
it would take months.
Only terrorists seem to have the indestructible passports. Like, none of the victims have indestructible passports. It's like, I don't know how we identified those bodies, bro. Let's just take a step back.
You know, another trick I think's laughable is they always find fingerprints on pieces of a bomb. I mean, come on. What are the chances? And whose fingerprints are you matching them up to? What, do you have this database of worldwide terrorists you're running them through? And it just doesn't make any sense. you know, within 2 hours of a bomb going off, you've already matched his fingerprints, you know, to some terrorist in Syria. Give me a freaking break.
Yeah, these like get into the, like the police station and ask them to fingerprint me within 2 hours.
You know, we saw it like in the fake killing of Osama bin Laden, you know, in Pakistan, where, you know, within like 2 hours, we had already run a DNA test on him and dropped his body off in the middle of the ocean for burial. I mean, yeah. Give me a freaking break. How long do DNA tests take? Yeah, I've never seen one. And who's, you know, whose DNA are you matching it to get a positive result? None of it makes
sense.
What
I loved particularly about that case was that they wanted to, all right, Muslims are traditionally a desert-based people, right? Now, the U.S. military claims that a traditional Muslim burial has to be at sea within 24 fucking hours, Ken.
Right, except they all live in the middle of a desert with no water.
So every time somebody carks it, the whole civilization has to move to the ocean just overnight, you know, and just get that body out of the way. I mean, because obviously, you know, you wouldn't want the sharks to go hungry, bro. But, I mean, it's only the ocean. It's not like there's enough for them to eat out there. You need to supplement them a little bit of early in there. It's going to help the ecosystem, bro.
But you're right. If people looked at it logically, these investigations should all take months. Yet with every one of these false flags, the investigation is over within a couple hours. Completely. Case solved. You know, we have who did it, what country is behind it, what group, you know, what their motives are. We have their manifesto. We have the bomb-making factory in their house with their ISIS flag in their bedroom. You know, and their drop passport at the scene saying they're from Syria. It's all the same. And that's not how real investigations work and real police work. It's just not. All these investigations, if legitimate, would take a long time to put all the details together. And you would wait till you had the end of the investigation for passing new laws or bombing countries or what have you. But with all these false flags, it's immediate. You know, we're going to pass this law. Now we're going to bomb this country. And you can see, you know, if you know what's going on, it's very obvious. You can really see what's going on.
And as you say, it's speeding up, right? How many attacks do they need to justify what particular acts and what kind of time frame? What are they leading to? Because I think it's like a suppressive fire. Let's say human emotion, human thought gets accelerated when it's not under threat. Okay, when it feels at peace, when it's calm, it has time to think, it starts to evolve really quickly. But you want to stop that from happening and prevent it if possible. So how many times do you need to fire a gun over the head of that livestock before the livestock starts to think that it's out of danger again? Right? And my guess is it has to be constant. You have to keep all of us in a constant state of anxiety and fear. The problem is certain tricks don't work anymore. When you're small and you come across particular spiders or something like that and they're poisonous, you're very scared of them. But as an adult, you've learned how to deal with them and squash them, and it's all fine. So what they've done is they've raised us to fear certain things, and they've reinforced those fears over time. And now part of us is starting to wake up and realize that this actually, it's false. There's something real to be concerned about because it's actually dangerous. But just because it's false doesn't mean it can't hurt you, right? But whatever they're doing seems to be wearing off. So whenever a bully is starting to be scared off, right, if he looks like he hasn't got the upper hand anymore, he redoubles his efforts and becomes even more vicious in order to get you to freak out. But if you stand your ground, they eventually back off. But these people aren't schoolyard bullies that we're dealing with here. We're talking about people with frickin' nuclear weapons and unlimited budgets and unlimited amounts of mind-controlled slaves that they can throw into proxy wars.
Right. You're not going to see them back off ever, because if they back off, then you're going to see people get into government that will bring charges against these people that have done all these corrupt, evil things, and they're going to be tried in courts and jailed or even put to death for the treason that they've done, and that's what it is. So you're not going to see them ever back off. You're going to see exactly what you said. They're going to double down, and we're seeing it now. You know, in 2015, we saw a false flag attack approximately every 25 days. And now we're up to almost maybe about 5 a week. It's ridiculous the pace that things have increased, and it's exactly, in my opinion, what you're saying. They're doubling down. They know the world economy is collapsing. They know that they're going to be people are going to hold them responsible for the economic collapse. They need to crack down immediately, and they need to push their agenda forward now. And that's exactly what we're seeing, in my opinion.
Okay, so what are the simultaneous control ventures we've got here? So end result is totalitarian, all-powerful shadow government globally, right? And in order to have such a global government, you need a world army, you need a world police, you need a world surveillance system, and a world banking system, and a world religion, all right? And those are more or less the five pillars. It's pentaculturalism, basically, Satanism to a large degree. but it'll just basically be like that. So if on the financial sector we want to talk about the control aspect, we've got TTIP and the TPPA, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, and the Transatlantic one as well. They're being implemented right about now. At the same time, there's protests going up against that. We're having all of these big terrorism attacks that are distracting from it and making everybody kind of afraid to leave their homes, whatever. I don't know, maybe. What else is there in play currently? There's the Brexit vote, which is incidentally very similar to that little French exercise where they go, we've got an we have a state of emergency. It needs to go for 3 months. There's another emergency. We need to extend that emergency for another 3 months. And then it's very similar to the Brexit. Oh, well, you do realize that it took a long time to get the EU set up, right? So it's not actually going to get dismantled anytime soon. So we said we'd be out of it in 3 months. Well, we've got a bit of a problem with that. So I'll tell you what, we're going to add on another 3 months on it. What? What? You thought that if you got a vote on it that we'd just leave all of a sudden? You know? Oh, is it a very, very inconvenient truth for you that your vote doesn't actually matter when there's ruthless criminal sociopathic scum that actually control the banking system in your country? Oh. I'm so sorry for... Oh, you thought your vote was going to get you out of the EU. I'm so sweet. Isn't it sweet? I mean, being cynical in a world run by psychopaths, I found is actually essential for one's survival because it allows you to make really, really bad jokes that are almost as bad as reality. Help you survive it. Let's hope so. Because I don't know about you, man, but if things are all heading up, we're going for another economic collapse. But here's the other problem with the economic collapse thing. Have you noticed how people come out every year and say, hey, the elite are going to collapse the economy this year? Every year they come out and they say this. And I understand why they're saying it, because the economy is fragile. And also people, when they're afraid of all their money disappearing, they're more likely to buy financial products and advice from you when you tell them that there's really bad stuff going on. And I'm starting to see this kind of internal parasite within the truth movement, within the alternative media. It started to grow really slow at first, but I think that people have realized there's actually money in telling people that you're the alternative and that you're telling them the truth, while simultaneously selling them the same fear and just different products to cope with that fear. Have you noticed that?
No, but that makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. Sure, I mean, you're just playing with people's thoughts and their fears, and if you can make money off of it, yeah, I see people taking advantage of that. But look at it this way too. Even if you don't believe economic collapse is imminent, which I believe it, but even if you don't, there is a reason why all these false flags are being stepped up to a furious pace lately. They want to accomplish something immediately. Otherwise, they would just be having a false flag here and there, like they've done in years past. You know, even after 9/11, we didn't even see any terrorist attacks for years, false flag terrorist attacks. And now we're up to about five a week. Now we're up to about five a week. So they have something up their sleeves that's going to happen soon, in my opinion, whether it's economic collapse or it could be something else. It could be a major false flag attack where nuclear bombs detonated or World War III, something like that. There is something that they're planning imminently, in my opinion, and that's the reason these events are being stepped up to the furious pace that they have been.
8 years, right? 8 years since Obama's been elected.
Right.
Which was 8 years after 9/11, which was during the financial collapse. If there's a timetable, let's say we're looking at the year 2000, 2001, and that's actually today sort of thing, like as in there's an increase in terrorism. There was the USS Cole bombing and 9/11 that happened in the same year, as well as a embassy bombing in Kenya or something like that. And a number of other escalations as well. And then boom, you have 9/11 and a whole chain of events comes off. That's 15 years ago. And here we are today. What did they do after 9/11? I think there was a lot of legislative change, but they also made off with a lot of heists, I think. There was a lot of financial heisting going on with 9/11. Had that guy, Jim Willey from goldenjackass.com on the show. If you haven't listened to that interview, Kurt, you got to listen to it. Very interesting. But he reckons that there was Jim Willey.
Yeah. Yeah, Jim Willey is a fellow Costa Rican. He lives down here with me. Yeah, anyway. Anyway, go ahead. I will definitely listen.
And so he reckons that there was 100 billion in bearer bonds, 100 billion in diamonds, and 100 billion in cash at the bottom of the World Trade Center that wasn't there after it was gone, right? And he reckons that 9/11 was a cover for the world's biggest bank heist, because at that point, the World Trade Center was the world's largest bank. So I'm starting to think now, what's the other biggest financial center that's actually left? What is there possibly left to loot, right? There aren't any big centers like that. Maybe Bank of International Settlements. I don't really have the answers on this one, because when you're talking about globalism and all of this geopolitical nonsense, any move they make, you instantly recognize that it's a move that they've made. But before they've made it, it's very difficult to predict what move they're going to make is the problem.
Oh, no, you're right, because they can make a whole host of different moves. It's difficult. Yeah, I mean, you can guess and you can suspect, but could anyone really predict that there was going to be a truck attack in Nice 2 weeks ago? And there would be nobody that could have predicted that two weeks ago.
Yeah, because I would have told them that, and they would have said, well, that doesn't sound very nice.
Right. But nobody could have predicted that. I mean, we can all see the motives and the overall plot line, but specific things they're going to do, no. It's really hard to predict. You're right. We can predict war, or we can predict economic collapse or what have you, but nobody can really say, oh, there's going to be a nuclear bomb detonated on New York City next week. You know, unless you're in the know. You're just not going to know in specific exactly what they're doing and when.
And that reminds me, I think the week or the couple of days before 9/11, there was a whole bunch of kids in kindergartens around the city saying that the Twin Towers were coming down, like in the week before 9/11, because they'd overheard Mummy and Daddy talking about it and that sort of thing. It's like, whoa. So much foreknowledge. That's another of the big warning signs that it's a inside job as well. Foreknowledge.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you saw that with 9/11 with some of the stock trades shorting some of the airlines. And, of course, no, Larry Silverstein not going to breakfast like he did every day at the top of the Twin Towers and that sort of thing. You know, you knew. If you knew about it, you're involved probably. You know, and then we have the five Israelis that said they were there to document the event. They were filming the planes hitting the World Trade Center, supposedly. But they were there to document the event. Sure. So they obviously had foreknowledge, too. So, yeah, I mean, if you have foreknowledge, you're most likely in on it.
Doesn't take a genius. But the problem is you have to find the truth underneath this frickin' avalanche mountain of lies. That's how they keep the truth covered up. They don't come up with a clever lie. They come up with a hell of a lot of really easy, stupid lies so that you have to sift through and go through this enormous frickin' pile with pieces of paper flying up everywhere. That's bullshit. Ah, here we go. A single fact that's actually worthy of note in this entire 3,000 pieces of legislation. I found it!
Right. I mean, look at something like the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting from last month, okay? You know, we're told that there was this Muslim guy, he didn't like gays, he went and shot up this nightclub and, was killed. What's true and what isn't? I mean, we don't even have any evidence the guy was even there, yet alone shot anyone, yet alone was killed, yet alone hated gays, and that's why he shot everyone. There's not even one shred of evidence the guy was even in Orlando. So what is true and what isn't true? You're right. It's lie upon lie upon lie upon lie upon lie, and you really have to dig to even have any kind of idea of what's true and what isn't.
That's why they call it a cover-up.
Right. But it's so many levels. And then they start telling, you know, the media will come out days later and start telling more lies. Oh, Omar Mateen's, the FBI has now lost track of Omar Mateen's wife and she's disappeared. Okay, like we really believe that, but you know, we go back. Was he a shooter? Did he hate gays? Was he even there? You know, we don't even have the most basic questions answered. And now we're being told, well, his wife has disappeared. Okay, it's just lie upon lie upon lie upon lie upon lie. And that's the extent they go to lie, to cover things up, their evil deeds.
And they must repeat it many, many times. It's like somebody says, oh, the media never tells the truth. And I go, no, that's not true at all, bro. The media tells the truth all the time. Half the reason why the truth movement has so many of the facts that we do is because a lot of it is actually lifted from the mainstream media headlines. They do tell the truth, but the real powerful, scary truths, the real interesting ones, they only tell it to you once and don't repeat it to you 1,000 times like they do the lies, you see?
Oh. Right. And you know another trick they like to do is when they pull off an event, then whenever they pull off that event, they'll refer to two or three of their other past events as a reminder. They do that constantly. Constantly. You know, like we saw with the Nice truck attack. Every story you read about the Nice truck attack, they're also talking about the Bataclan theater attack and the Charlie Hebdo attack. It's always a constant reminder. Always. You know, the Orlando shooter, he said he was fascinated with the Boston bombers. And, you know, he was friends with the Fort Hood shooter or something like that. No, they constantly remind you of their past deeds, constantly.
It's like throwing out these little guilt by association rhetoric, you know. Oh, this guy's associated with ISIS. What's ISIS? Well,
Did you know that Aitha is like a name we came up with after people stopped being afraid of the name Al-Qaeda? So the marketing team goes, well, you know, like Al-Qaeda's too many syllables, okay? The fluoride's working too well. People are too dumb. They can't deal with more than two syllables. What about ISIS? You know, that sounds really great. And then when they get dumbed down even further, we can change their name to just is. Think about it. Terrorism. It's justice.
Yeah, no, you're right. So, yeah, really though, nothing's going to change if people aren't, going to wake up and demand change. I just don't see it. There's so many people that are opposed to, you know, what we're talking about today. They would be listening to the show and just saying we're crazy and ignoring it all. And well, those are the people that are the problem. And there are so many of them. I don't know. We're in for a big calamity. It's inevitable because of those people, because they make it impossible to demand legitimate change, in my opinion.
I feel that our calamity has already happened. It's just happening in slow motion. We constantly live our calamity. It just gets worse.
No, you're right. It's a long, slow decline.
Right, and somebody told me this. They go, oh, the elite's going to oppose the Third World War so they can usher in the one world government. And I go, whoa, hold on a second, bro. It was the last time you drove down the street and you saw people waving 9/11 was an inside job banners or something like that. Anything truther related that's outside of the mainstream narrative that you've actually seen with your own eyes, that's right there, it's visible, it's become a public movement kind of thing. You ever gone down any street at any point in your life and seen that? Virtually not, unless you're the person who's actually going there to the protest itself, right? And this is how disparate and this is how divided we have been. And so when people tell me they're going to stage an event and then usher in their new world order and everything like that, I go, well, of course they are. We're not mobilized enough to stop them if they wanted to. There'd be 90% of people that would just go along with whatever's going on. Maybe 5% wouldn't really be happy about it, but they just go on and survive. And then it'd just be like 95% of people against the rest of us sort of thing. The people who can think, the people who won't back down, the people who have bravery, who have skills, the people who have knowledge. It'd be the only people that would be left to resist them. And it'd only be from the current stock of people that are existing today, because I don't think that there's a large possibility with the amount of negative influences that are being beamed into society through the medical system, through the vaccines or the fluoride in the water or the brainwashing in the media, that this might be us living today, the last generation of people who can actually think for ourselves. And once we're gone, there will never be another chance for humanity to be free, ever. It'll just go extinct. That's the kind of obligation that people today who can still think have. And it's a huge pressure. And that's why a lot of people don't take up the mantle. They don't go, okay, well, nobody else sees it. Nobody else is doing anything about it. I have to do it, I guess. That's what makes you that person, because nobody else is doing it and you have to. Not because anybody told you, but because you force yourself to. Don't have a choice.
That's interesting. But so many people, you know, there are this other group of people that knows what's going on, but they're too connected to the system to do anything about it. You know, they work for the government or they receive government benefits or what have you. And they willfully choose to ignore what's going on. And they know what's going on. So there are those people too. And it's just very frustrating that, you know, when you're awake, all of this is so blatantly obvious, but you can't even show a large percentage of these people evidence and try and convince them. They just completely deny it all immediately. Won't even look at it. Won't even think. And they just don't want to hear it. Not only that, you know, they attack you for bringing out this information. It's just, it's crazy. Just crazy brainwashing.
Yeah. Well, you know what you call a French suicide bomber?
What?
Napoleon Bonaparte. And the dog likes it. The Vinnie Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinnie's jokes. You see, there you go. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't have a bit of fun on it, right? Okay. Let's just take a deep breath and just think about this for a second, because I've got a lot of things going around in my head right at the minute here, Kurt, because we're talking about the end of the world as we know it. And the end of the world as we know it happens every moment, doesn't it? Right? This moment that just passed will never come again, and we'll never see its like again, right? I got that sensation when I turned 31, and I was just like, well, hold on a second. Yesterday's not coming back. Those old days, that time when I can get out of an armchair without groaning, it's not going to come back, bro. It's like, you know, you can only go forward. And I think a lot of people, they forget that you've got to actually keep moving forward. It's not enough to just wake up in the morning. You also have to get out of bed. And the same is true of being a truther. It's not just enough to wake up to the truth. You have to be able to speak it. You have to be able to push it out there in your own way without somebody else's guidance or say-so or approval or that kind of thing. So let's think about this. End of the world. We've got the global bunch of scumbags doing all their stuff. They play their games. We play ours. It's like the tortoise and the hare, right? We're the hare. We're real fast and we can evolve really, really quickly. You ever tried to legislate the internet? The internet changes and it's not the same thing by the time you've drafted the fucking legislation. That's the big problem that they're having. And that is what gives me a little bit of hope. I think Dr. Leonard Caldwell said it best. He said, any hope is good, even false hope. There's no such thing as false hope. Anybody who doesn't have any hope doesn't survive. They don't achieve anything. Isn't that a freaking profound realization? That what these people try to do is make us have no faith in each other. All right? Oh, they're slaves. They're zombies. They'll never wake up. And I love it how people who've only just recently woken up like 6 months ago say that about other people who 6 months ago they were exactly fucking like. Oh, you're enlightened, are you, bro? Oh, yeah? You've achieved the pinnacle of understanding because you figured out that two jet airliners can't turn 200,000 tons of steel and concrete into particleized atomized dust, have you? Well, that's clever, yeah? You sussed that. It only took you 15 years to figure that one out, eh? Oh, yeah? I can see you've been fucking paying attention. You ever done it at barbecue? Yeah? Been barbecuing, cooking something for more than an hour? Yeah? Did the grill melt? No? Did the barbecue explode into particleized dust? Did it? Didn't flow over your pool area like a cloud of death? Like the nothing for the never ending no? Didn't happen? Okay. No, that wasn't an inside job. You know, it doesn't take that much analysis. But it takes somebody actually getting you to ask the questions in the first place. Have you noticed that? From birth, and I think you really, really saw this when you went to university and did the being a lawyer, the importance of getting things correct and not getting things wrong. There's a right answer and there's a wrong answer, and you've got to make sure that you repeat the right answer and regurgitate it at the right time. Otherwise, you're just not good enough, son. That fear of being wrong is what has stopped people from learning and changing, because the only times I've ever actually learned anything or changed anything about myself is when I've been so colossally wrong that I feel ashamed of it.
Well, you do learn a lot more by making mistakes. That's for sure. You know, and even like, you know, looking at a lot of these false flag events, do I always get them all right? No, but I try. And you know what? I might make a mistake, but the next one I might be a little better at analyzing it. You know, that's how you learn, making mistakes. Absolutely.
So I want the audience to know this as well, that we all make mistakes and we all have our little heroes, don't we? We all go like, oh, he's so great. He knows things that I don't. But nobody's God, right? Nobody's omnipotent. They don't know everything. Nobody knows everything. And my question is to a whole lot of the listeners who hold, you know, talk radio show hosts, even the people that hold me in high regard and think that everything I say is the truth or is backed up by facts. That's just not the case, bro. Okay? Nobody is. Everybody's been called into question here. What's really not been called into question is the track record of people, right? Are they working for the other side? What do they do? How do they make you feel? Et cetera, et cetera. Start running down this list. Who, what, when, where, why, and how? You start asking those questions about any event, and you will start to get to the bottom of it, and you'll start to find out that it's a lie as soon as they can't answer any of those very simple questions. You know, the underwear bomber. Who, what, when, where, why, how? And then you come to the truth, don't you? And suddenly, hey, Kurt, they don't have any answers for any of those questions. And in fact, they try to tell you that there aren't any answers.
You know, another thing is motive. A lot of these events, there's just no motive. Now, why would someone in Nice, France go get a truck and run over some people on a promenade? You know, if you are mad at a certain group, won't you go attack that particular group? Why have all these random attacks in public? Why would you go shoot up an airport, you know, like in Brussels? It just doesn't make sense. You know, if you're a Muslim and you're mad at a particular group, you're going to go where you can do the most damage to that particular group. You're not just going to go attack random people. And in almost all of these false flag events, that's what we see. And if people would just ask why, like you're saying, who, what, where, when, why, but the why, to me, no one can ever answer it because it doesn't make any sense why they're attacking this particular group. You know, why would someone go to the Bataclan Theater and kill 100-some people at a concert? It doesn't make any sense.
Unless they were under MKUltra mind control and being used as a government mind control slave in order to stage events as justifications to pass progressive groups of tyrannical legislation to progressively enslave the population in a nest of red tape that they can never fucking escape. Just off the top of my head, I mean, I'm just taking the stab in the dark here.
There you go.
Yeah, it could be. Stranger things have happened.
Could be.
I don't like it, right? Because it's such a serious thing, and I understand that the show was not exactly the most serious show in the alternative media by any means, but I think that we do get across some very important points on the show because we're not clouded by that whole, you know, I'm worried about being judged for what I say or for what I think. Have you ever been on a show and you wanted to say something, but you didn't say it because you thought it might be just a little bit too much for the host to handle? You ever been in that situation?
Have I been in that situation? Yeah. Some of the mainstream media interviews I did, obviously you have to be careful about what you say or they're just going to attack you back and call you conspiracy theorist, crazy, what have you. But you just, maybe not that you don't say something, but you have to be careful about how you word it. Might be a better explanation.
Do you feel that kind of
not so much with alternative media? The alternative media, you can almost say pretty much what you want. Yeah, mainstream media though is a different story.
And it's like putting a filter on yourself. Okay, think about, okay, what would somebody who's not prepared to accept the truth accept? And you sit there and you think about it for a second about it. It's like you tell the child there's no Santa Claus and break it to him gently. Yeah. Actually, it was me that put the presents under the tree. Yes, I know. I'm your parent. I'm in a position of trust, and I've been lying to you and deliberately deceiving you for a long time. And this may come as a shock to you that I'm actually this kind of lying, masquerading person. It was me wearing that beard.
Dad, how could you? I believed in you.
I mean, it's coming to that point, right? We've become so childish as an entire society. You ever noticed that? When one of my listeners, he told me he brought his 12-year-old son into the New Zealand Parliament and saw the parliamentarians debating in the debating chamber. He turns to his dad, like 12 years old, and he goes, "Dad, they're like children." And you read the papers and you go, okay, what's a fourth grade reading level, a fifth grade reading level, or so on and so forth. And it's like, have a look at what the vocabulary has been in American mainstream media and presidential speeches over the last 50 years, back from JFK, and then it just goes down and down and down and down and down. Now you're about a 10-year-old's reading level. That's the average level of communication. So when I try to have an adult conversation with one of these people, it doesn't work. But that's I guess that's just part of the gig, isn't it?
Well, the other thing is too, when you just try and talk to people in public, how far do you go? Do you say that? You know, you start talking about these elite people that are working against them, you know, and their false flag terror, and how far do you go? How many details do you give people where they'll listen and not tune you out? Do you give them any at all?
No,
you know,
no.
It's always a tough call.
You give them their own questions, right? Self-satisfying questions, because they come to the answer themselves. It was like in that movie, The Big Fat Greek Wedding, right? They wanted to convince the father of the family that everything was his idea, so the woman come up with this manufactured problem and tell it to him, and then he goes, "Hey, I'll tell you what I do. I do this and this," and they go, "Oh, well, thank you. You're so wonderful." And I think that's what's happening with all of us, is that we get presented with these solutions so that we don't actually find them within ourselves. We get presented with these answers so that we don't have to go looking for them, right? Pearls before swine. If you don't make people suffer and actually do some work, anything you give them won't be valued by them. Isn't it? If they want to know, they'll ask the questions and then you'll answer the questions. If they don't want to know any facts that you give them, they won't really research, they won't really care. However, it's about constantly putting it out there, because they can't unhear it, can they? And next year, maybe the next month, maybe somebody else might come up to them and say something very similar to what you've told them. And they'll start thinking about it a little bit more, maybe a few more times through their life. And then all of a sudden, one day, penny drops. Oh my God. All those years ago, and that person and it puts two and two together for them. Then they wake up. So I think if we all just play our part, say the truth to whoever we're talking to, say what we think, be honest, there's nothing that can stop us really. Yeah. What are they going to do? Turn the hologram off? And there's something I was talking with one of my listeners about today as well. He says it's very difficult to convince people of anything, because he believes we live in a holographic universe. And I said, then you don't know how a hologram works, bro. A hologram captures all of the information in the tiniest part of it. Every cell in your body has the replicant DNA for your entire body. Every stem cell that you have could create any organ in your body, any bone. Now, the reason why that's so important in a hologram is that any piece of information that we change, any piece of information that we put out there, gets captured and copied across the entirety of the hologram. That's very interesting to me, because it means we can, in a very small way, affect everything just by doing what's in front of us.
You know, it's an interesting take on things. So, you know, I guess we just have to keep talking, and you're right, just let people ask questions when they're ready, when they want more information. Maybe just throw tidbits, small amounts out, and see if anyone asks for more information. That's about all you can do, really, I think.
Although the Jehovah's Witnesses have a different approach to giving people the truth, so they seem to be quite effective. Although they do have a psychopathic control structure that bought out about an eighth of Brooklyn and to get it go to dilapidated and then sold it off to organized crime. So I don't know how we're going to come off with their business acumen. But anyway, I digress. Kurt Haskell, thank you very much for joining us on the Vinnie Eastwood Show today. Do you have a website there that you might be able to give out to our fabulous plush listeners?
Actually, all I have now where I put most of my posts is on my Facebook page. So if anyone wants to add me, just send me a friend request on there. You know, whenever there's a false flag event that comes up, I try and tear it apart and post a lot of articles about it. So I've been busy lately, really. All the false flags, but yeah, no website right now. I don't really have anything going on media wise. Just send me a Facebook request, friend request.
Kurt Haskell on Facebook. That's KurtHaskell. You can Haskell him if you really, really feel like it's necessary. Thank you very much for coming on the show, bro. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and donate today. And especially start giving us those regular monthly or weekly donations, if you please. It really helps to pay the bills around here in the fluoridated little paradise that we call Auckland and the Agenda 21 dictatorship of the regional council. I love this city, but I want to kill it. Oh my God. It frustrates me a lot in my brain places. Anyway, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll see you again sometime, assuredly.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom. American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp USA .org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at hempusa.org.
The last hour of American Freedom Radio you have been listening to is proudly sponsored in part by BigReggieMix.com, the global healing station.
Produced by Mitch Santel and executive produced by none other than Errol Brown, winner of 5 Grammy Awards and the last producer and engineer of Bob Marley. Visit us now at BigReggieMix.com for the latest show schedule, updates, and blog postings. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, too. BigReggieMix.com.
On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. They shuffle around every 4 years. Doesn't mean anything. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around. I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who did not vote, who, in fact, did not even leave the House on election day, am in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics,
no taboo topics,
no fear of doom,
no fear of doom.
We are
American Freedom Radio,
American Freedom Radio.